Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Savirjankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Mavidishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaur Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Once you render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably, and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, that is called pure devotional service. These words describe the devotional service of an intermediate madhyama, Vaishnava, service that reaches up to the stages of ecstasy, bhava, and pure love, prema. So this also then establishes where the madhyama is. Like that. That the madhyama then is up to the stages of ecstasy. Well, one is also what we mentioned before, it goes through the aspect of establishes the madhyama. Because otherwise, some will put that from ruchi, then that is the beginning of the mukta stage. But it's the point of. It's like a cross point. You have two points that over, how you can say that you can take as the middle. Well, actually, you can take three. One is that you have bhava, which is in between sadhana and prema. And that's also the place of Brahma-bhuta. So you can take the whole bhava as that. The other is then between the conditioned and unconditioned, so between asakti and bhava, at the point of Brahma-bhuta. Then you can also take the point of nishta, which is between the anartha nivritti, where there's so many things, anarthas, that are holding us back, and then progressing in dynamically in ruchi, where one has a taste, so things become positive. The other is one is by one's intelligence, one's pushing forward. But then in, I hope, thank God. Sadhu. Wow, this is amazing. I'm impressed with this one. Yeah, very colorful. I don't know if I've ever seen one this colorful. I'm just going to get one of the chair. So you have those three places. That where it's like a junction between the two, or what's in the middle. So then we can see here is that it's up to this and then into the, reaches up to the stages of ecstasy and then to pure love. So this is madhyama. Okay.
And the madhyama.
Yeah, this specifically is this finding there. But it, at the same time as that goes all the way through, until means that point means one has to be up to prema, because it also describes there, because we see is that the render loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, that is called pure devotional service. It says, yeah, up to the stages, up to prema, because then from prema it's called pure unalloyed devotion.
Up to prema, no, means some, like you said, rati.
Yes, it means up to, but it says up to prema. It says up to the stages of ecstasy and pure spiritual love, prema. So, yeah, so it means you would be specifically as a madhyama, it would take one up to bhava. But this same thing still applies all the way through. Though in this case, then, but by nature, it is free from that. Once one gets beyond the conditioned nature, then one is freed from the need for material profit and gain, you know, through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. So in the one, it's a sadhana that you're practicing and you're endeavoring to do. The other, it's natural. Like that. It is natural at that point. Okay, continue. By itself, without the addition of the qualities described here, worshipping the deity of the Lord with faith is the activity, the need fight body. So it means if you're worshipping the deity, but you haven't added the things that you are rendering service favorably without a desire for material profit or gain, or material speculation, then that's called a neophyte. Means if one is worshipping the deity and applying this, then that's a madhyama. But if one is worshipping the deity but not applying this, means you're worshipping the deity and expecting to get some material profit from there. Some profit, some gain, like this. Kapila Muni describes this as devotional service that's tinged with the mode of passion. Is that the mode of passion, devotional service and passion, means that one is a separatist, so that means you're not interested in the, you know, devotees aren't so important. One has one's own idea, one's own plan, one doesn't work with others. And one worships the deity for material gain. Like that. So that would be what this is meaning. Then that puts one as a neophyte, like that. Though a neophyte situated in passion. Well, if someone is just proud of their material accomplishments, the material position, and in this way then denigrates others, that's one in ignorance. And then if someone is interested just in a peaceful situation, like that, but is not a separatist, but then that's devotional service and goodness, like that. So from there it's illuminating. But still it is touched by, personal satisfaction of just being freed from material misery, like that. So in passion you want material gain, the other is freedom from material misery. So you want material happiness and the other is freedom from material pain, like that. So there's still something tinged. And continue. This means that a neophyte devotee does not have the qualities of pure devotional service, which are, one, being without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, and two, rendering transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably. Favorably means how Krishna likes it rather than how we like it. However, on the day that these qualities are manifested in his heart, such a person may be called an intermediate madhyama devotee. So it's simply a matter of realization and surrender in that. So it's not it, when that happens, one can't say. Someone may be a neophyte devotee for a very short time. Someone may be a neophyte devotee for a very long time. Like that. Like we see the acharyas, they would take up devotional service. They would, you know, come as if they were ordinary persons. And for a very short time, then they would, you know, take the role of kind of like the neophyte, then very quickly you'd see them move into madhyama, and then very more quickly into uttam. Like that. You know, and some would be more quick, like Narottam Das Thakur. Now he was already a devotee before, wasn't it? Yeah. And then he went down to bathe in the Padma. And then when he went, then Lord Chaitanya had kept some of his prema there with Padma Devi. And said, when Narottam Das Thakur comes to take bath here, I think at that time he was 12, says, you give him this prema. So then he came down, took his bath, he went in the water, you know, looking like everybody else in the village. When he came out of the water, then he was, you know, shining golden color, and he was mad in transcendental, you know, ecstasy for love of Krishna. And then, you know, everybody thought he was crazy. So for some, they manifest it a little more quickly.
Just after a bath.
Yeah, yeah, just how long it takes to dip in the water and come out. Yes, about 1 second. Okay, so. So that's the whole thing, is that these points are being made strongly so that we're aware of the position, so we're very careful about maintaining material attachments and desires through performing fruitive activities of jnana. And also that we're rendering service favorably. So when those things manifest, that one is able to perform service on that platform, still it's sadhana, then one's called a pure devotee. So a pure devotee then is showing that it starts at the level of madhyama, pure devotional service. So sometimes there's talk about, you know, one has to be a pure devotee. Pure devotee starts from madhyama. That's why the preachers, then they preach, they help the conditioned souls. So therefore, that's where one considers pure devotee. But this pure devotee is different from pure unalloyed devotee. And it's even different from Uttamadhikari. So these are all different. One can be Mahabhagavat, Uttamadhikari, pure devotee. You know, someone who's fixed in devotional service. Like this. These are all different definitions that can be described. Yes.
Prabhupada described in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Paramisha and Chandrasekhara on the level of Kanishtha.
Kanishtha pure devotees. This is from the definition, if you're taking pure, because you have different ways you can describe the Kanishtha Madhyam Uttam. So in one definition, then Uttam means one who is, you know, realized in the scriptures and can defeat anyone in argument. Madhyama means he is fixed in the scriptures, but he may not be able to defeat everybody in philosophy. It means he's not well read enough that he can always come up with some quote or some, you know, argument, some presentation that will defeat the opponent. But he won't, even if he's defeated, he won't be, his faith will not be disturbed. And third class means that they, you know, basically wouldn't know really how to begin, but generally their faith will become disturbed. If they're defeated, then their faith is also maybe shaken. But they didn't know how to speak, and at the same time their faith was not shaken. So therefore Prabhupada said it's third class pure devotee. From that definition. But otherwise from this definition of favorable service without desire, then you would put them, you know, much higher platform. You know, you can put them in the Uttam platform. Because these are eternal associates. So it's not that the eternal associates, you know, necessarily study all the Vedanta and other things like that. It means some do, and some don't like to see. The Goswamis did. That was their thing, is that they studied and preached these. And then we see other of the eternal associates, they just come and take part just in the daily pastimes. You know, though the preachers are involved in the pastimes, what we see here is that they would take more of the mission. Does that make some sense? Like that. So you have different definitions like that, you know, of means based on faith. So the one that was there that was described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is based on faith. Like that. This is based on the qualities of the service rendered. Like that. And then there's also those on chanting. The one who chants, you know, regularly, one who chants always, and one who by seeing them you chant. Then these are given as levels also. That is how a materialistic devotee becomes an intermediate devotee. It means they become. It's not that there's some... It's just when these things awaken in the heart, you know, one sees that, one understands that, then they manifest. So then that becomes... Then they go from neophyte to intermediate. As long as these qualities do not arise in his heart, he is a materialistic devotee. Because then one is performing fruitive activities or mental speculation to get gain. And his purpose is not
necessarily for Krishna's purpose. It's for his own purpose. Though there may be connection, he worships the deity, things are done for Krishna. But because one has a strong need for all kinds of... one is maturely motivated in much that one does, therefore it's called materialistic. Like that. And then the intermediate is called, because then that desire is you know, reduced significantly where that is not the main purpose. It may be subconscious by habit, but it's not conscious. One is changing one's practice. The practice is changed, and one is conscious that one wants to give this up. Like that. So we see the materialistic devotee, and sometimes it's like that, sometimes not. Maybe totally materialistic, sometimes not, and then slowly, slowly that will just be, by rendering service, then one is able to take advantage of the association with devotees. That's what we heard before. It's when one performs all these different activities, though they're not pure devotional service, the result of them is more service and the association with devotees. So even performing service that is not a... You know, the motives may not be so perfect, but if it's proper, then slowly, slowly it will bring one to the point where one will appreciate the association of devotees, and one will be able to then take up this mood of favorable service and not desiring materialistic benefits. So then one comes to the platform of pure devotion. But we're not satisfied with that. We're trying to get to pure, unalloyed devotion. Okay, so then next. This means that he is considered only a shadow of a true devotee or a shadow of a true Vaishnava. Here the word Krishnanushilanam refers to spiritual love, prema. However, the word anukulyena refers to all four qualities of an intermediate devotee. Favorable love for Krishna, friendship, mercy, and neglect. Okay, so this has been so favorable love. So now he go on to describe next the second of these qualities is that one is friendly to the devotees who are surrendered to the Supreme Lord. Any person in whom pure devotional service is manifested is considered a devotee surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Neophyte devotees are neither pure devotees nor are they surrendered to the Lord. Their tendency is to disrespect the true devotees, the true pure devotees. Therefore, one should make friendship with intermediate and advanced devotees only. In answering a Kulina Gram devotee's question, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the neophyte, intermediate, and advanced devotees. He explained that the intermediate and advanced devotees are counted among the true Vaishnavas, whereas the neophyte devotees, who do not know anything beyond worshipping the deity, are not yet true Vaishnavas. The true holy name of the Lord does not appear on the mouths of such worshippers of the deity. The name that appears in their mouths is only the shadow of Lord Krishna's holy name, Chaya Namavas. Lord Chaitanya ordered the intermediate Madhyama, householder devotees, to serve all these three classes of devotees. The three classes being a person on whose mouth the holy name of the Lord is heard even only once, so then they're considered within the class of devotees. Two, a person on whose mouth the holy name of the Lord is heard always. And three, a person the sight of whom inspires one to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should serve a Vaishnava who chants only a shadow of Lord Krishna's holy name. One should serve only a Vaishnava who takes shelter of the pure holy name of Lord Krishna. So there are different kinds of Vaishnavas, so there are different kinds of service to Vaishnavas. So here he's pointing out, after this is all said and done, is that but anybody who's a Vaishnava, who's chanted the holy name, then they must be served. Though now he'll describe the different kinds of service, that service must be there, respect must be there. So we always have to be careful is that when these technical points are being discussed and is pointing out that the true Vaishnavas are Madhyams and Uttams. Neophytes aren't considered true devotees. They're shadows, but they're shadows of devotees. They're not shadows of something else. Like that. They may be materialistic devotees, but they're so that's why they're shadow. And they give up that materialism, then they're true devotees. But all these three must be respected and worshipped. So this is the balance. Otherwise it'll just be, okay, these guys, you know, who cares? But then it's the same mistake, because the point is Madhyama means one who respects and appreciates Vaishnavas. Therefore, here he's saying, for the Madhyama household of devotees, they must serve all these three classes. Otherwise, the tendency will be to disregard the neophytes. But that makes them a neophyte, because a neophyte doesn't relate to the devotees. Madhyama does. So a Kanista, they're hearing this, then they would say, oh, therefore we don't have to deal with Kanistas. But that's a Kanista mentality. Because a Kanista mentality means they don't accept and respect the Vaishnavas, while the Madhyama does. So the Madhyama, even though they're a shadow of a devotee, they respect and honor them, serve them.
Could we say the distinction between pure and pure unalloyed? Could we say the distinction between pure and pure unalloyed is pure, they do it because they have to do it, and pure unalloyed because they do it for Krishna's pleasure?
No, it means pure and pure and unalloyed. Pure means that they're doing it for Krishna's pleasure all the way through. Pure unalloyed means that there's no other mixes. The focus on Krishna is complete. There's nothing else. Because there's also spiritual desires, personal desires, like desire for liberation, you know, like that. The gopis aren't worried about getting out of the material world, like that. Like we see the story of Krishna had a headache, and so then they needed to get the dust from the feet of the devotees to cure his headache. So then many devotees were approached, but they wouldn't give, because they said, how I can give, then I'll go to hell. So then when the gopis were approached, they immediately said, yes, take the dust. And then they were asked, well, aren't you afraid you'll go to hell by giving the dust from your feet on Krishna's head? And they said, that doesn't matter to us. If Krishna's headache goes away, we'll go to hell. If we can cure his headache, and the only thing we have to do is go to hell for that, then that's fine with us. So that's pure unalloyed, is that there's no other desires. Well, all the others who were approached were devotees. But there's devotees for liberation, for they want to be free from material contamination, they want to be on Krishna's planet, they want to be an intimate associate, they want to have same opulence, the same form, like this. So all these things must be given up to be pure and unalloyed. Otherwise one can maintain those, and that's called pure devotional service. Therefore the Madhyama isn't perfect yet. Right? Because he's still in the practice. He still has maybe spiritual desires. They're favorable, they're connected to Krishna, but they're not pure and unalloyed. They chant the holy name because they like the taste, like that, rather than simply that it means that it's they're associated with Krishna, they like Krishna so much. You know, it's just there's a taste from that. You know, saying it's just like us. We'll take prasad. We're appreciating the taste of the prasad, meaning the particular combinations of spices and this and the expertise of how well it's cooked. But you get a pure unalloyed devotee. That will be, of course, that can be appreciated. But more, what they appreciate is the taste of that Krishna has tasted it. Because when Krishna tastes it, some of his saliva is there. So they're appreciating that. Then on top of that, then it's, you know, it's been nicely prepared, and by the devotees have done it with such devotion, therefore it tastes so nice. You know, but it's completely different. They're appreciating it from a different angle. We're appreciating it because our taste buds like it. They're appreciating it because of Krishna's kindness there and because of the devotion of the devotees. So their taste is different. You know, it means they perceive what we perceive, but way beyond. So that's something different. That makes sense. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
either shyness, shyness to approach devotees is a key symptom of kanistha, if it's not related to shyness may be accepted as a very elevated symptom in the devotees we address, but in someone who is very neophyte, its shyness can be considered as a shadow of false ego.
It depends what the shyness is from. If you want to shy because if you go in front of them because you may not be doing things right, but when they get chastised, then that you could say, yes, that's there. If it's a matter of one is feeling shy that the person is, you know, whatever it is, maybe advanced or whatever it is, so you don't want to come and disturb them. You know, if the shyness is mixed with humility, then that's one thing. If it's if one is worried that one's pride will be diminished, that's another thing. That you could call materialistic. But otherwise, shyness is not. We see even the queens of Dwarka, they were shy to come out in front of Krishna when he'd come back from a journey. So they would kind of stand a little distance and send the sun. Like that. So it was special like that. So you see Krishna. Yeah, and then he would embrace the sons. So then that would then be like embracing the queens. You know, so that was also shyness. So someone who deals, has a tendency to deal in a formal way, shyness is quite a natural thing. You know, and shyness is always there. Is that okay? Okay. The making friendship includes associating with Vaishnavas, conversing with them, and serving them. The moment one sees a pure Vaishnava, one should greet him, honor him, and offer both a sitting place and conversation. One must serve him in all these ways. One should never hate, envy, or insult him. One should not disrespect him if his body is ugly or if he suffers from some disease. Yeah, so that means all these, because these are all external. Because otherwise, how can we hate, envy, or insult someone who's serving Krishna? And then also disrespect means we shouldn't disrespect because of bodily situation. The third of these qualities is that, yes. No. It just means we only move on if there's no discussion.
I have two questions in relation to this. First,
means just right now.
Yeah.
This one, okay.
First, is it legitimate or is it something one should try to work on to have not hate, but to have a kind of disgust for someone who is an offender of devotees? If someone has offended very seriously some devotee, and then is it legitimate or is it something that a form of envy to have the aversion for this person? And the second question is I forgot the second question.
One may avoid the association of someone who's offended, but one can never envy them or hate them because the soul is pure. Though the soul, by conditioning, may do all kinds of things. So it's what they do that's the problem, not them. That's one thing. Then another thing is that by doing a wrong, it never corrects a wrong. So by dealing improperly with devotees, it never corrects. It won't correct. Third thing is that why that particular devotee we are feeling that, you know, that because of an offense to them, this other person is worth dealing with improperly. Can you catch that? It means, okay, devotee A has been insulted by devotee B. But why are we so emotionally involved that we're willing to deal, you know, on a not so, you know, socially nice level, because they have disrespected devotee A?
Due to our appreciation to devotee A.
Okay, so then, but then we also have to see, is if there's any material motive behind that also. You know, it means if it's only appreciation, that's one thing. If it's the spiritual master, then that's another thing. Because then we have to check and see, why is that person special? Are they special on their own qualities, or are they special because they're connected to us? You know what I'm saying? Like we have, mother has a child. Her own child is special. Another's child may not be special.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? Both are, but because it's her child, therefore it's special. Right? But
someone is when we appreciate some devotee, then automatically they become special to us.
Yes, that's there. But is it because we're special, therefore they're special? Yeah, like that. It means it's my spiritual master, because I'm special, therefore they're special. If they weren't my spiritual master, they wouldn't be special. I've chosen them, you know, so because I've chosen that person, therefore they're special, because I chose them. You know? You know what I'm saying? Like that. Or if it's because they stand on their own qualities. It's a subtle point. You know, also it's that we may be attracted to connect ourselves with someone because then it's more prestigious. You know? Just like the you know, because of their connection, therefore they were feeling that something special is there. You know, so they're very big, so if I'm connected to them, I'll be big. Does that make some sense? So these are things that one has to check if one is trying to analyze this position. Of course, Vaishnavas, you know, should never be offended. But one has to then understand that it's what's been done that's the problem, not the person who's done it. But because that soul is in that mood, therefore they may be avoided. Their association may be avoided. You know? But one has to be very, very careful in that. One can never hate or this and that. Because then If one devotee has offended another devotee, then if we offend that other devotee because of that, then we'll also be, because they're also a devotee. They've made a mistake on one side, but still other aspects are there. So therefore you're offending a devotee yourself. You know? So it's a very delicate thing. That's why generally one stays out of, especially the senior devotees, one stays out of the line of the thing. If there's some disagreement, then one just stays on the sidelines. It's their thing to do. Because they're senior devotees, and they can work it out amongst themselves. Okay. Is that okay?
Hate the sin, not
the sinner. Yeah. It means is that, we mentioned, hate the sin, not the sinner. Because the sin is bad because it's been done, but it doesn't mean that the person can't be corrected. Because you're dealing with something material. Material is always temporary. So anything materially done is the results are temporary. Also, is that okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
The second question is related to the sentence, but I forgot.
The sentence. Says the third of these qualities is one is merciful. Oh no, here we go. One should never hate, envy, or insult him. One should not disrespect him if his body is ugly or if he suffers from some disease.
Yes, in the qualifications of the disciple, it written, I think it's in Nectar of Devotion. I forgot. That there is a qualification of the spiritual master and the qualifications of the disciple. Funny enough, it was written that the disciple should not be sickly. A spiritual master shouldn't take a disciple who is sickly. And it seems an apparent contradiction with what you just read. That one shouldn't be considered in terms of body.
No, because this is a Vaishnava. This is one who has established himself as a Vaishnava. Therefore, the physical condition or stuff, these are just, you know, something from the karma. But you're not having to take that karma. Right? You understand? But the guru is having to take that karma. So therefore, if they're seriously diseased, then that means they've done some very heavy sin. So that is why the consideration would be such a person, then one would be very careful about initiating, because of that sinful nature, you're not sure whether to be able to maintain properly the principles, maintain the proper mentality, because of that sinfulness. Then we may see that they would, though they at some point have the sentiment to take up properly devotional service, because of that immense amount of sin, they may deviate from that and manifest all bad qualities towards the Vaishnavas. That would be the consideration. That is specifically that instruction. Then would be for those who are working on, especially the Karmakandis, that would be a rule for them, because their whole thing is piety. So taking on such a disciple, they themselves may not be able to act piously, and taking them on may severely hamper the spiritual master's advancement, because they're taking so much karma. Because their idea is to get to the heavenly planets or get to the Brahman. But for those who are taking up devotional service, then you don't necessarily have that as a problem. Because the power of the holy name, power of the whole process, then is, you know, may get rid of these things. The third of these qualities is that one is merciful to the innocent people in general. The phrase innocent people in general means they who do not understand the spiritual truth, they who are bewildered, and they who are foolish. So those who don't understand the spiritual truth, who are bewildered, and who are foolish. Persons who are not educated have not entered into the theories of the Mayavadis and other offenders, have not learned how to hate the devotees in devotional service. But, being overcome by powerful false ego and false possessiveness, do not yet have faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're called innocent people in general. Okay, because it means who don't understand the spiritual truth, means they haven't been educated. Mayavadis, they try to understand the spiritual truth, therefore they come up with their own bogus ideas. And they don't have a bias against devotees. And they haven't developed faith in the Supreme Lord. But that not having faith is not because of the Mayavad or offenses against devotees. It's just due to complete material attachment. So this we see as interesting, is that the in this, then we see is someone who's karmically involved or sinfully involved, then their position is actually better than those who are proud of their, you know, birth and knowledge and have taken up the impersonal path. Someone who's very pious, high birth, but taken up the impersonalism is actually in a lower position than someone who is just grossly, sinfully involved as far as devotional service goes. As far as material piety, then of course it's the other way around. But the point is ultimately the soul has to take up devotional service. And that's why you see Lord Chaitanya in India.
In Bhagavatam you have the prayer like
a little louder.
In Bhagavatam you have a prayer like Kunti Devi, where she prays that and who has high birth and cannot approach the Lord with sincere feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, because one is proud. Like that. So this is the definition of who's innocent. There are these persons that one is merciful towards. So then he continues here. Even if one is a great scholar, if he does not have faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is counted amongst the innocent people in general. Right? That means he hasn't taken up Mayava, he's not offensive towards devotees. But even though he's a great scholar, not just a simple person, main thing is the faith. Even though he has approached the entrance to the house of devotional service, a materialistic neophyte devotee may also be counted among the innocent people in general. So that means because they're junior in position. So in other words, mercy is given to those who are junior. Like that. So this innocence here is then, I say, yeah, it's given to someone, mercy is for someone in need. So then these persons need Krishna consciousness. It means everybody needs, but these are specifically in need to be brought up. They're in the junior position, they're not. Yeah. So he's pointing out that it's not just simple villagers, then they're the innocent, but also great scholars who don't have faith, or the neophyte devotees, they're also those who are worthy of mercy. Right? Therefore the Madhyamas associate with the Kanistas, because they deserve the mercy, they're innocent. Otherwise they're not situated strongly in devotional service because of the material desire. They may be performing the service because of their mentality, then the service is not pure. So then their position needs to improve. For such a devotee has not yet attained pure devotional service and does not yet clearly understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When such a devotee understands his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, associates with pure devotees, and chants the holy name with purity, then his status as one of the innocent people in general is thrown far away, and he attains the status of an intermediate Madhyama Vaishnava. So we see Madhyama is very advanced. Madhyama is very advanced. The tendency is to just put Madhyama as just... The Madhyama is the innocent person, the general person. And the neophyte is just the brand new bhakta. Like that. And then the pure devotee is, you know, millions of light years away. But here it's putting that even though one is within devotional service, if one is not, he doesn't associate, his chanting is not pure. And he doesn't understand his relationship with the Lord. It means that I'm a servant. Because if I'm a servant, then there's no need for me to gain material gain, prosperity. That means my need is to please Krishna, to render favorable service. If you give up the need for materialistic gain and safety, and that endeavor, then by, you know, for one's own needs, then one can understand one's position as Krishna's servant. And taking that up, then one can render favorable devotional service. Otherwise the tendency is it will be favorable towards us, our own desires, rather than for Krishna's. That would be the tendency. Yes.
What is the limit of the endeavor when one must undergo in order to have a... If someone is sick and the doctor tells them, if you don't take care of your health and your diet, you will have to get an operation in 10 months' time or 3 years. Then they think, okay, I have to make some adjustments. I can't be a full-time volunteer, look for myself, and this and that. Or should one just try to... ignore, you know, one's own body, thinking that Krishna will take care of his
wishes. Means if one can do that completely, means it's easy enough to do that when it's falling apart but hasn't fallen apart. And when it does fall apart, if you can maintain that mentality, then that's one thing. Otherwise, the point is whose body is it? We can neglect it because we think it's ours. If it's ours, we can neglect it or take care of it as we like. But if it belongs to someone else, then the cultured person then will take care of it because it belongs to someone else. It's in their care. It belongs to someone else. Uncultured person then neglects it because it's not theirs and it's not Krishna's. I mean, it's not theirs and they don't care if it's someone else's. So the point is the body belongs to Krishna, it's to be engaged in his service, so that we have to see that it's taken care of, so it's engaged in Krishna's service. But that's not endeavoring for material gain. It means what comes easily, one takes care. If nothing comes, one doesn't over-endeavor. To over-endeavor when there's not facility, that's considered improper.
Quite often it's difficult to distinguish what is over-endeavor and what is proper endeavor.
Over-endeavor means is... See, over there's two things. There's going to be determination and there's stubbornness. Right? They're two different things. Stubbornness is you've decided you're going to go that way. Right? And then you run into this wall. So stubbornness is, okay, I'm going that way, I've made my determination, so then you have to make a hole through the wall. That's just being stubborn. You've decided this is the way to... Determine is you get to the wall, then you figure out there's a wall here. Then you may check around, right, what's another way to get this done? Then you figure out, okay, then there's some opening on each side. Right? And then you go around. You'll get the goal. That's called determined. Stubborn is you're going to get it in the way that you've planned it, and that's it. But Krishna, material nature, doesn't necessarily always work like that. Like that. So even someone says no, but they made the determination, they did it, and it worked. But that's because they had the karma that it would work like that. That they would think of the plan that would work rather than something else. And someone who's not working, it's just that's the arrangement. So the modes of nature are doing it anyway. It's not us doing it. We're not involved in these things. Is that makes sense?
But in the process, if we get anxious, is it...
Means anxious for who? If we're getting anxious, then who are we getting anxious for? What's the purpose of that anxiousness? For ourselves or for Krishna? In other words, one endeavors, one's sick, one takes the medicine, follows the diet, these things. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, then we don't worry about it. Right? We just know the reactions are so great that with this amount of medicine and diet, it's not going to correct it. Karma vyadhi means something that will span more than one life, or it would span a whole life, you know? Like that. It means if you have something now that won't go away until the end of the life, it's a karma vyadhi. It just means all of it's karma. But it's called, designates karma vyadhi, means it's so heavy the reaction that no amount of medicine is that's going to get rid of it. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it means something small you can put off, but something very big you can't. So that's all. So if one finds that it's a karma vyadhi, then in that situation, one may not endeavor so, you know, heartily, you know. When one follows, one doesn't want to aggravate it, but at the same time as one is not overly endeavoring to try to make it work because it's not working. But if by following properly, then you get result, then one accepts that result and moves in that way. That makes sense.
Because confusion may come because you're supposed to take care of the body. So if something's not working, the confusion may come, okay, maybe I didn't do that. Maybe I should find a different doctor.
So yeah, it means you try that. It means whatever's the thing. But when you've tried all the doctors, tried all the medicines, gone to every country on the planet and this and that, done everything, it still doesn't work, then you can understand it and don't bother. You know? Plus, you know, it's just a matter of time. You don't, you, whatever it is, if it's there, so you try. It means if it's within your power, then you try. But don't spend too much time on that. It shouldn't be that gets all the time and then there's no service done. Otherwise, what's the use? Then you're, you know, very, you're going to die anyway, but instead you die supposedly healthy. You die without that disease, you die from another disease, you know, another situation. So one has to be careful. Many times you see devotees have tried everything, and then after many, many, many years, after 10 years, and they find some doctor that gives them some medicine, it goes away. So then that doctor is great, all the other ones are bogus. But other devotees have gone to that same doctor, found his medicine to be completely useless. Then after years they found one of the other doctors you said was bogus, and he gave medicine and it worked. Why? Because they were supposed to have the disease for 10 years. 10 years is over. So therefore now they come in contact with the doctor who gives the medicine, it goes away. That's all. While the other doctors, the other 10 doctors you went to, he went to in the years when it's going to last for 10 years, so therefore it's not going away. You know, unless the disease is basically fatal, means it is supposed to, that all diseases will go away on their own with time. It's just how long. Because they're only there because of sinful reaction. So once the sinful reaction is completed, then there's no need for it anymore. You understand? Once the punishment is over, it's over. So disease will come, disease will go.
But we have the thing which says that fire, disease, and death should not be neglected. So
yeah, it means otherwise it will get. It means you take care of it. It's your duty to take care. You know, so as long as one feels that one is in control of the situation, then you must take care. And you understand you're not, then you see the situation, the indication whether you take care or not. Okay. Something to say? For an intermediate devotee, it is absolutely essential that he be merciful to the innocent people in general. As far as possible, he should invite them to his home. Even that is not enough. He should show mercy to such persons by helping them to find faith and pure devotional service, an attraction for the pure holy name of the Lord. Because they are not learned in the scriptures, the innocent people in general may easily fall down because of association with wicked persons. Therefore, the intermediate devotee should mercifully give his association to the innocent people and gradually allow them to hear the glories of the holy names and various teachings of the scriptures. A diseased person cannot cure himself. He must be cured by a physician. The patient sometimes speaks angrily or commits other like offenses. He is to be forgiven. In the same way, if an innocent person sometimes acts improperly, he is to be forgiven. This is called mercy. An innocent person may have some misconceptions. So if you can't forgive, you can't be merciful. An innocent person may have many misconceptions. He may have faith in the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, faith in various non-devotional philosophies, an inclination to worship the deity of the Lord in order to obtain various material desires, faith in yoga and other like paths, disinterest in associating with pure Vaishnavas, or attachment to Varnashram and other like things. You probably nowadays add in or attachment to not following Varnashram. In this way, he may have many different kinds of misconceptions. Then by good association, mercy, and spiritual instruction, he gradually gives up these misconceptions. The neophyte devotee quickly becomes an intermediate devotee. Oh, I see, no. When by good association, mercy and spiritual instruction, he gradually gives up these misconceptions, the neophyte devotee quickly becomes an intermediate devotee. Then he is a pure devotee. So here again, he's making the point, Madhyama is considered pure. His worship of the deity form of Lord Hari was thus the foundation upon which he built the house of all spiritual auspiciousness. Of this there is no doubt. He does not make the mistake of trying to follow one of the myriad of competing philosophies. Because he does not make this mistake, he has a sense of true faith. Yes, so then worship of the deity is the foundation. So, because Pancharatra becomes a very important part of the whole devotional process to free us from our conditioned nature. So we worship the deity. But for the neophyte, it may be that he's doing it out of material desire. But at the same time, the same process will be the foundation on which pure devotional service will be established. Because spiritual world means you worship the deity. But there you're not worshipping the Archamurti, you're worshipping Swayamrup, the original form. When he worships the deity of Lord Hari, a follower of the Mayavad philosophy, or other like philosophies, does not have even the slightest true faith in the deity. Such a person is an offender. It is for this reason that Srimad Bhagavatam, 247, Canto 2, Chapter 2, 40, verse 47, describes him with the phrase, Shraddhaye Hate. He worships with faith. Oh, I see. So this must be describing a devotee. So he worships with faith. And so that means the Mayavadis don't. In their hearts, the followers of the Mayavadi philosophy and other like philosophies think the Supreme Spirit has no form. The deity form that we worship is merely the product of our imagination. How can such persons have faith in the deity form of the Lord? But then that means the paraphernalia, their body. How would they know that they're not? How does the Mayavadi know that it's not all void? You know, it's like, so therefore, everything could be a product of imagination. Even their idea that the Supreme has no form, and that there's something to be elevated, because if we're just dead matter, then what's the meaning of it all anyway? It's all illusion. How can such persons have faith in the deity form of the Lord? In this way, the Mayavadis worship of the deity, and the most neophyte Vaishnavas worship of the deity are very different. So he's pointing out the Mayavadis, though their worship and the worship of even the most neophyte devotee is different, because the neophyte devotee has faith in the deity, though he may still also have faith in material life, material philosophies, gain, and all kinds of, you know, side Vedic topics and New Agey topics and all these different things. His faith is there that this will actually perform, you know, good, rather than, unless it's connected to Krishna, then what's the use? Yes.
Previously, you came up with there's a point that
more loudly.
Previously, there's a point that forgiveness brings mercy.
Means. Let me see. Means without okay, means the patient is talking about with the doctor. You can't be cured without the doctor. But if the patient sometimes speaks angrily or commits other like offenses, he is to be forgiven. In the same way, if an innocent person sometimes acts improperly, he is to be forgiven. This is called mercy.
One devotee told me that unless you forgive yourself, you'll never be able to forgive others.
Means forgive yourself, but forgive for what? Forgive ourselves, then doesn't say, oh, so you're okay guy, okay, you're so sinful and this and that, we forgive you, and then go on sinning. No, it means if you don't forgive yourself, And then in that you get into a whole thing of ignorance, that you identify that this is me, and therefore I'm so useless and sinful and disgusting, then that's useless. So forgiving yourself means giving up the concept of ignorance. That you understand I'm not the body, I'm not all these things, but I've been, by my materialistic desires, I've been tricked by Maya. So whatever has been done is all nonsense. But we have to move on. So these things have to be given up. It's not that forgiving ourselves means we don't have to worry about getting rid of those anarthas. But we acknowledge they're there, and therefore we just move on from that. Otherwise, then we become self-centered. So when you say forgive yourself, means you're trying to get them off being self-centered. But it doesn't mean that those things aren't there in the heart, and those things aren't incorrect and must be corrected. Otherwise, you forgive yourself, and then you're, you know, you're very happy. You're free from all these things, but then you may do all kinds of nonsense. You know, so that's the other side. You may just go from there into properly performing service, but if someone really thinks, they may go the other side. So how deep they've gone this way, they might be able to go that way. So one has to be careful just in applying that, that one understands the proper application.
Sometimes I think, like, if I unintentionally displease some Vaishnava, so then I feel bad.
So then you just forgive yourself, and you don't have to worry about getting their forgiveness.
No, what to do with it?
Yeah, that you go and get their forgiveness for. If it's possible. If it's not, then you just absorb yourself in chanting the holy name, and then after a long time, things will be worked out. Yes.
So by analyzing yourself, going in and seeing the motives of how you're acting, then you start to tune into who you are, and then by doing that more and more, you start to understand your character. And
your personality and
the correction
comes
within. And then when you do that enough, you can actually
help others. Yes. That would be. One has to be also in that, then one should distinguish between the soul who actually is none of this conditioned nature. But the connection to the conditioned nature, which is different from us. The gross and subtle body are not us. So what we're contemplating is that in the beginning. But then behind that is our materialistic desire. Just general, generic desire. It's not specific for this or that. It's just the desire to control and enjoy. Then that has manifested in this life in this particular way as this gross and subtle body. Another life it was another thing, depending on where we are in the path of karma. So we identify that the gross and subtle are there, that takes us to the next level. It means it takes us off the physical into the mental. Then from the mental we have to get to the spiritual, into the soul. So then when we get to the soul, then we can see us as souls, we have material desire, just in general. We just want to enjoy some way. Maybe we prefer this way of enjoying. That's the conditioned nature. But there's a principle on which we're just trying to enjoy. Then from there, we can get past that to the platform of our actual position as servant of Krishna. And then one can get situated properly in devotional service. Like that. So that was also the meaning here is that the neophyte doesn't know their relationship with Krishna. You know, so that can be taken on a few levels. They don't know that they're servant of Krishna. And then another thing is then for the advanced devotees, then they understand what is their particular relationship, you know, specific. But here for the Madhyama, it's talking more in general, like that. Is that making sense? So one should, in going inward like that, that's part of the path, is that, it was mentioned before, is that the living entity develops this material consciousness, then identifies with the subtle body. I am this mind and intelligence and all that. and these senses. And through the senses, they exit into the material world. Because whatever we see and what we call we're here and our perception is all through the senses. So then generally most people work on that platform, just through the senses, trying to appreciate and enjoy and control and get done whatever they want to get done, according to their false identity. So it says that, but if one performs devotional service and does that for pleasing Krishna, then it reverses this process. And then one starts to go next to the platform of the mind and starts to see what the mind is wanting, in other words, what we would call our personality, our nature, all these things. But then one should keep going so that they get to the point of the soul and understand that I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not the Lord and enjoyer. Then that can take one, back into the spiritual realm. Like that. So that makes some sense? So it's just a matter of continuing that's the next step. From the platform of the senses, the next is the platform of the mind. And then from there is the platform of the consciousness. Like that. And then from there, there's then this platform of pure consciousness and our eternal service to Krishna.
So, when the consciousness is fixed in that service mood, internally, then externally, you just want to encourage others in
yes.
that service.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you're appreciating what you've gained from that. So then you will be also very much able to encourage others to take it up. I mean, something you like, you can get other people to like. Something you don't like is very hard to get someone else to do. So if you have attain some development in that and some appreciation, some value for it, then at that time you'll be able to give that to others. Like that.
And when you can give it to others, you just in ecstasy.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And we're in ecstasy because Krishna is happy. Like that. Because Krishna, that's what Krishna wants. So when we do that, then Krishna becomes very pleased. Yes, the connection is complete, and then it's just a matter of that connection maturing.
Limitlessly.
Yeah, limitlessly. But it still needs to mature from the Madhyam platform to the Uttam platform, the platform of Prema. But that will happen. If one continues that process, then it's automatic. Means it's just like we can say automatic. Sometimes automatic is taken in the Western sense that you do nothing, right? Automatic is taken is you don't have to do anything, it just happens. But automatic means is like we say, if you go out the gate here and then follow this road, you'll automatically get to the temple. One may say, well, how will I get to the temple? What do I have to do? This said, don't worry about it. You just walk on this road, you'll automatically get to the temple. So you made the endeavor. But the endeavor itself will automatically give, like that. So it's that's the meaning of the automatic. So if we're preaching, we're chanting, we're following, we're correcting this consciousness of this desire for material gain and doing things selfishly, but we do it for Krishna, then automatically that process will bring us to prema. It'll just happen. So then being established as Krishna in friendship, that's also the thing. Friendship with the devotees, like Shakyam, means the Madhyam. So it's friendship with the devotees, but it also simultaneously means friendship with Krishna. Because when we're friends with the devotees, then we're friends with Krishna. We're not friends of the devotees. Then the depth of friendship with Krishna is not very much. He's our friend, but we haven't established our friendship with him. Then that friendship matures into, eternal service. Is that? Yes?
She spoke about giving the mercy to others. Mm-hmm. My previous question was based on that context. Like, I remember that when I was preaching to one student, although I did with good intentions, but I didn't use proper discretion, so I spoke a little bit in a heavy way, and the person got put off.
Mm-hmm.
And the person was quite sensitive. So then I was praying to Krishna that something may happen to rectify the situation. But in that context, I don't know whether I can forgive myself or not, and I got kind of stuck in that.
Forgive yourself means is you will learn from that and don't and move on. Right? You move on. This is also why the more specific you can ask the question, the more specific you is the answer. Like that. Because otherwise you can be taken in so many ways. So you give the particular situation, then its application is a little bit more. Is that okay? Something else? How can in their hearts the followers of the Mayavad philosophy and other like philosophies think the Supreme Spirit has no form? The deity form that we worship is merely the product of our imagination. How can such persons have faith in the deity form of the Lord? In this way, the Mayavadis worship the deity, and the most neophyte Vaishnavas worship the deity very differently. It is for this reason that even though he does not have the various virtues of a Vaishnava, at least he is not a Mayavadi. That the neophyte is called a materialistic Vaishnava. Oh, I see. It is for this reason that the neophyte is called a materialistic Vaishnava. Materialistic means he doesn't have the virtues of a Vaishnava, therefore materialistic, but he's not a Mayavadi, so therefore he has faith in the Lord, so therefore he's Vaishnava. So therefore you get the term materialistic Vaishnava, means he doesn't have the virtues, but he's not a Mayavadi. In this way he is considered a Vaishnava. By the mercy of saintly devotees, such a neophyte gradually becomes elevated. This is inevitable. Second-class pure Vaishnavas are inevitably merciful to them. Then the neophyte devotees worship the deity, and chanting of Lord Hari's holy name do not remain shadows of the real thing. Quickly they manifest the true spiritual nature. Okay, so he's considered a Vaishnava, so therefore they're not neglected. Right, they're in the kavas of innocence, so therefore mercy is given. Then very quickly they become, they manifest their spiritual nature and come to the Madhyama platform. Any other questions? The time is something to say.
It's not regarding this. It's regarding karma. That some people say that if you work for something, if it's your karma, you'll get it. If it's not, you won't get it. Sometimes some people say it's happiness. Everyone's seeking happiness. So even you can work extra, you can work hard, you can get a lot of money, you can get the things you want, but you may not enjoy them. Because it does appear that we do have some, you know, I can endeavor extra if I want to. I have that thing. What I get, I may not enjoy it. So, what is the actual karma? Is to get the object or to enjoy it? Or
means your ability to work is already karma. That somebody can work so long and so much is already karma. Means you have so many people who would like to do so many things, but they can't do anything. They don't have the energy or the determination of that. So to have the determination, the energy to work more than normal and therefore get more, that is also karma. It means everything. The situations one's in. It means you have two people in the same situation and one gets something, someone doesn't. So this just, it's all karma. But it's arranged in such a way that it's unseen, so therefore we feel we're the doers, because that's why we're here. Is that, that independence is maintained. So the independence is actually desire. So if it's too much understood, then the tendency will be is that one won't do anything. That's also there. Sometimes, you know, it's like some knowledge, if one is not ready for that, then you lose enthusiasm. That's why when it's explained what the positions are, it's very essential that it's explained in such a way that it's inspiring. Otherwise, one could take these same points that are made here and just basically say the neophyte's just a write-off, so, you know, it's nonsense. But he's gone to great endeavor here to point out that their position is therefore one that needs mercy. Therefore, the Madhyama should preach to them. And at the same time, is because they are devotees. And all devotees should be respected by Vaishnavas. So even though he said all these strong things on one side, then he balances it on the other. So the thing is when the inspiration must be there. That's why in the Karmakanda not too much is put, because people will only work if the result's there so that they can enjoy. Therefore, they don't study the impersonal, the Jnanakanda section of the Veda. So in the Karmakanda, that's not mentioned. It's just mentioned how sin is bad and you'll get a bad reaction, so therefore you're going to suffer, and that's not what you want. But you do pious activities, then you'll enjoy. So therefore, to get this pious, you have to do these things. And all those things that they say are nice things. You know, be austere, self-control, give in charity, be kind, control your anger, you know, be non-violent, all these different things, which are all, you know, principles within devotional service. But for such a materialistic person, they're not interested in devotional service. So therefore, then, they're following just because of what they'll gain. They think they're the doer. So that's what Krishna calls in the second chapter, capricious work.
They'll accept that because they think there's some benefit.
Yeah, because they're thinking that they're the doer. But the point is it's still, they desire it, then the super soul sanctions it if it's within the realm of their karma. It means you have so much reactions of karma, but what you're taking now, you could say, oh, I'll take this, or I'll take that. You know, it's just like in a meal. The whole meal is yours, but you can decide whether you eat the sweets first or the bitter, and take a drink first, or eat the chutney, or like that. You know, so it's still something's there, but it's only because it's there you get it. If there's nothing in the pot, you don't get it. You may say, oh, give me some more of this, but it's not there, so you're not going to get it. So if he sanctions it, then the modes of nature just get it done. Because it happens simultaneously, we think we're doing it. We don't see how the super soul and the modes of nature are acting, because it happens so smoothly, you know, what they call it, seamlessly. We don't see. So that's why if you point all this knowledge out to them, they may lose their inspiration. Therefore, technical points are left till later. You see, the technical points in the Gita are in the last six chapters. The technical points in the Bhagavatam are in the 11th canto. After you've already understood the process, been inspired, you have the goal, you know, to develop love for Krishna and all that, then someone can accommodate these technical points. Otherwise, and before that, the tendency is then they'll become either bewildered or discouraged. You know, because it looks too far, so therefore my endeavor won't give fruit. You know? But that's the whole thing of the mystical thing, is that when you surrender to the Lord, then the material ocean is reduced down to the size of a cat's hoofprint. Right? So when you take shelter of the boat of the mercy of the devotees, then you step onto the boat, but then it's reduced down to the size of a cat's hoofprint, so you just step to the other side. Like that. It's just like simultaneous. It's a mystic thing. So therefore, and whether you'll enjoy it or not, it doesn't matter whether it's more or less. Like the man, you know, who just gets some simple rice and dal after working out in the field hard all day, he probably enjoys that more
than the wealthy person who is eating all kinds of, you know, dainty foodstuffs, because the other man has worked and he's very hungry, while the wealthy person eats so many times, he never really enjoys any food. Unless it's super excellent, then when he tastes it, it catches. But for the you know, the person who's, you know, done so much work and is actual hungry, even if it is not as so excellently cooked, it will be tasty. Like that. So you may find that the common person may enjoy more than the person with more. So that's not a thing, is buy more. That's an idea. That's one concept that the mind has, is more. That's coming from greed. Greed is more will make me happy. You know, it may be more than what I can enjoy, but you'll see that many times in little kids, as you go to serve them prasad. And you can't give them how much they'll eat. They got to have 2-3 times what they can eat. They're just so greedy until they see that much on their plate. I remember seeing one 3-year-old kid, it was really funny. Little dinky guy. He wouldn't even start to eat until you've given him a full plate, like, you know, a professional prasadam addict brahmachari could eat. When that much was on his plate, then he would start eating. And then he'd eat like a bird and go away. But he wouldn't start. You couldn't convince him that, no, you're only going to eat half a chapati. He had to have 10 chapatis on his plate. He'd demand it. Then he would eat half a chapati and go away. So it's just greed. The mind thinks, if I get more, I'll be happy. But so it's karma. Whether you'll enjoy it or not. Whether you have more or less, this, that. So everything's karma. So then the question comes, as soon as you say this, then immediately the next question that comes up, well, what about my free will? Why? Because we want to be the controller and enjoyer and independent and all these things. What I do, I get my result, I enjoy it, it's mine. Immediately. Otherwise, why would that question come up? You know, I thought I had free will. Because then I'm bound, I'm this, I'm that. No, I want to be free, I want to do what I like. So then the point is, yeah, you had the free will to decide. I want to do this, I want to do that. And if you have the facility, you're there, right? Well, we call it's against our free will if you say, okay, I want to go on a holiday to the Bahamas, okay? And then you go down to the travel agent and they say, this will cost you, you know, $40,000. And so if you don't have $40,000, can you complain to them and say, hey, this is against my free will and all this. What is this? I want to go. You're not letting me go. What is this nonsense? No, it's just, you have the money, you can go. You don't have the money, you don't go. You know, so that's the thing, is if you think it, if you have the previous karma for it, then you'll get it. If you don't have, you won't get it. But your desire, that's the free will. And everything else is just carried out by the modes of nature. It's just the way it is. So therefore, it's not a matter of working. You won't get more than what you deserve anyway. You can't. You can if you take up sinful, but then it's a thief. Like a thief can take more than what he deserves, but then you'll be punished for it. If you work honestly, then whatever you're supposed to get, you'll get. So it's not a matter of more work. Some people go to the office for an hour or two a day, and that's all. And they make millions of dollars a day. Other people have to spend all day or run 2 jobs and can hardly make ends meet. So it has nothing to do with how much. You know, that's all. 2 guys are selling the same thing, shops next to each other. One becomes wealthy, one doesn't. So it's just a matter of what they're supposed to get. They both put in the same time, buy the same product, sell for the same competitive price. You know, but
so what is the measure? The happiness or?
Happiness is your perception of it, that's all.
And that's also, it must be karma also.
Yeah, on the material platform, yes. On the spiritual platform, it's just whatever Krishna wants, so you don't get involved. Whatever comes, you're happy with, because Krishna has given it. Just like with a friend, whatever a friend gives, you're happy with that. You know, if it's not a friend, then you look at the quality of it. You know, is it something I like, don't like, this, that. But if they're a friend, then you just appreciate the you know, sentimental value of it. So on the spiritual platform, then one can give up, and one can be, even on the material platform, one can give up the endeavor and just be satisfied with whatever comes. Because according to your karma, you're going to get something. No one has all bad karma or all good karma. So something will come. If you're supposed to be alive, then something will come for you to eat. You know, if you're not, of course, then that's another thing. But something will come, and that something that comes, then we'll be happy with it. We'll be satisfied. And so if we're satisfied with that, then we're happy. Happiness is simply satisfaction. We like it or don't like it. You know, one man's food is another man's poison. Somebody gets something and they go, oh, this is terrible. Another person gets it, this is great. So if we're just satisfied with what comes with you know, just a natural amount of endeavor, you know, according to our nature, whatever comes easily, without over-endeavor, then we'll be happy. Like Vamanadeva says, if I won't be happy with 3 steps of land, I won't be happy with the whole universe. Like that, you know, I'm small, what am I going to do with more land than that? So if I'm not satisfied with that, you give me the whole universe, I'll still be unsatisfied. So fulfilling material desires is not a possibility. It's a matter of just being satisfied with what one gets. Right? No one gets what they really wanted. And so therefore, if you're satisfied with what you get, you're happy. Is that getting
it? Materially, if you think you'll be satisfied if you get the other thing also, then you may go for it, you work for it. Even though so what would you tell a person like that, that you know, I really want this and...
Well, they should endeavor. It means you can preach to them. I mean, you can try to point out that no one's satisfied with anything in this world anyway. But if they're still determined, then they should do it according to what's proper. What is the proper way to do it according to religious principles? Because then no sin is committed. Then they will do, and if it's due to them, they'll get. Or by that endeavor, it will fructify and they'll get. But the thing is whether they'll be satisfied, that's another thing. Never, greed can never be satisfied. Lust can never be satisfied. Temporarily. You know, it's just like when you pour a lot of ghee on the fire does go down a little bit. And then as soon as the ghee warms up, then it comes up bigger than before. So it's sad. That's why Krishna then says in the Gita to cut. It's just the desire is there. One, by gradual process, reduces it down to the point you can cut. It's not that you gradually reduce it down to nothing. You reduce it down to the point where you can cut off. That's the process. So one should be satisfied with what comes easy, and then one will be happy in any situation. Otherwise, one will never be satisfied even if he's Lord Brahma. You know, because then it's like, well, I only got 4 heads. You know, the next guy over, he's got 1,000 heads. His universe is bigger. You know, so you can't be satisfied. That's the difficulty. That's why it always says, adukalayama shashvatam. It's temporary and full of misery. Because these are the 2 illusions we have. I'll be happy forever. So no, it's temporary, it's full of distress. And it's just the way it is. We may say, no, I'll get this way. But then that's being foolish. We're not accepting the nature of the material world. We're being natural. You know, that's the thing nowadays, to be natural and honest and all that. The nature of the material world is that you can't enjoy it. You can't be happy because it's dead matter. And the spirit can't enjoy anything. There's nothing in common to enjoy. Now, you have to have something in common. Your tongue has to touch something that has taste. Then you can enjoy it. Right? You can't, you know, put your tongue in the fire and then get a nice taste. Because the two have nothing to do with each other. Taste comes from water, not from fire. Right? If you put something dry in the tongue, there's no taste either. You know, we take a nice, let's say we take a nice cake and then we put it in the oven and we dry it completely and grind it into a powder. And then you put some of that on your tongue, and still you won't get any taste because it's dry. You have to put some water. When the tongue's dry, you can't taste. So it's there must be something common, right? Something has to have form for you to see. You know, there must be light, and you can see. Then you can appreciate the form. Otherwise, if it's darkness or it has no form, how do you appreciate? Right? It means you look up into the sky, you can't appreciate the air. Only when you see leaves move and that, then you can appreciate it. Because then there's something your eyes can see. So there has to be something common. So material nature can never be enjoyed by the living entity because there's nothing in common with it. There's dead matter in the living entity's spirit, so they can't, there's nothing in common. So it's simply the mind that thinks. It's simply the mind that makes that you enjoyed or not. The mind decided this is enjoyment, then you're happy. If it's decided it's not enjoyment, you won't be happy.
And that's just according to your conditioning.
That's yeah. What stage of conditioning you're in, so what qualities you've developed. You know? Because one gradually changes. You have this and then you become attracted by something else. So then according to karma, it starts to move in that direction. So therefore you'll have those tastes, those interests, so therefore those endeavors. Therefore, it's just whatever we have, whatever we find, use that in Krishna's service, then we're very happy. You know, that's how we can be satisfied, because then Krishna's satisfied. When we're endeavoring for our own, then Krishna's not fully satisfied, therefore we're not fully satisfied. And when we endeavor to please Krishna, then he's satisfied, so we're satisfied. Anything else? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainita Gaurav Premanandi. Jainita Gaurav Premanandi.